We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome to another episode of Medicalization, a podcast miniseries that dives into some of the most peculiar and fascinating stories of the history of medicine. Some figures made it their mission to etch their names into history. Others found themselves thrust into it. Either way, their contributions have made medicine what it is today. I'm your host, Wafiq Sedholm.
And I'm your host, Jessica Sedholm. In today's episode, we look at how one man's gluttony led to a traumatic and oh-so-painful death. In the aftermath, his physician utilized investigative methods to discover a most unusual and deadly disease.
Episode 4, The Great Wretch.
Please, doctor, open up. For all that is holy, I need you to wake at once.
What is that ruckus? Who is it? Coming! I'm coming!
Oh, doctor, thank goodness. It's James von Wassenaar. I'm in desperate need of your help.
With what, James? What in God's name can be the issue at this hour?
It's my brother, Baron John. I'm so sorry. You must come at once.
Let me just grab my bag.
He's been screaming for several hours now, and he's ready to meet the Lord. He's in so much pain and is incredibly weak.
I'll see to it immediately.
I cannot understand this. We were just having festivities yesterday, and he was in such good health and spirits.
How peculiar.
Quick, get on the horse. Yeah!
Dr. Boerhaave rushes on horseback to the Baron's bedside, and being the prudent physician he was, begins with a thorough physical examination and medical history. The patient looks extremely sick, writhing in pain emanating from his chest, unable to lie down or sit up. Any movement only exacerbates his agony, the worst of his life. Boerhaave is struck by his presentation, since he had treated the Baron in the past for several violent attacks of gout. In these prior episodes, the man was stoic, seemingly unfazed.
Naturally handsome and tall, already from his boyhood had he strengthened his body in almost all kinds of exercise. As a result, he enjoyed continual perfect health. Neither did excess of luxury or sloth ever weaken his health or natural strength of body.
This was different. There was something ominous in the air. Boerhaave remarked,
"It seemed impossible for a man to be capable of such suffering."
Like a detective solving a crime, he begins to piece together the events of the preceding day one by one in an effort to understand the Baron's malady. For the past 3 days, he had been eating a wide variety of foods.
He ate veal soup with fragrant herbs. He took a little white cabbage boiled with sheep, spinach, and calf sweetbreads lightly roasted, a little duck, the thigh and the breast, 2 larks, a bit of apple compote and bread, and ended his meal with dessert consisting of pears, grapes, and sweet meats. He had to wash it down with a little beer and some little wine from Moselle.
Surely, a feast fit for a baron. After gorging on the finest, he felt uncomfortable. And that's not very hard to imagine. He attempted to correct his diet, as he had in the past, with a concoction that induced vomiting, an emetic, as it is now called. Whenever he felt stomach pains, he knew that a few drinks of Cardus Benedictus mixed with warm water would purge himself. A gluttony that today would be easily described as an eating disorder was just good old-fashioned fun for the idle Dutch royalty back then. But for some reason, the purging was not working in its usual fashion, so our baron continued to slam them down. 1, 2, 3 cups of Cardus Benedictus. He finally began to see the effects. Following several episodes of vomiting, he felt a sudden tearing pain in his chest.
He was convinced that death was all but inevitable. By the time Dr. Boerhaave arrived to the Baron's bedside, another prominent physician named Dr. Debye had already attempted to deduce what was happening. Both physicians stood dumbfounded. They had never seen a presentation like this before. The man was far different from the athletic, strong Baron that they once knew. He was decompensating rapidly, and many attempts to ingest herbs and elixirs just caused more pain and weakness. Several theories ran through Dr. Boerhaave's mind as he formulated his differential diagnosis.
As I am thinking this over, I become befuddled with many remarkable things.
Was this an attack of the gout? That seemed implausible, since his joints were without pain. His vertebrae appeared aligned and centered, so a dislocation was not likely either. Was it perhaps poison? A thorough evaluation of his ingestions proved uneventful. His son had eaten a nearly identical meal the day before, so this seemed unlikely.
Could it be a classic case of disruption of the four humors? Only one way to find out. Dr. Boerhaave sprung into action. Bloodletting. Perhaps that would do just the trick. He applied a handful of well-controlled leeches in order to relieve the pressures of the circulatory system. They drained him of 10 ounces of blood. Surprise. The Baron only felt worse. So, they were running out of time. The great pains were spreading to his back, through the sides of his breasts, and throughout every internal part with great misery. In one last-ditch effort, one last Hail Mary, against the recommendations of his own physicians, the Baron took one last sip of almond oil and tepid water. With excruciating pain, he said his final graces to God and asked his servants to stand him on his knees so he could surrender himself to the heavens.
His strength lacked for him to do more. He was exhausted and stopped. He turned to his right side, soon shivered with cold, grew pale all over, cold sweat came all over his body. Not long after this, he suddenly became unconscious, and at the fifth hour of the evening, he who deserved all good things died very peacefully.
Well, sort of.
Boerhaave wanted to find out definitively what had taken the Baron's life so suddenly, and so petitioned the family to allow for autopsy. They agreed. The doctor was meticulous in his inspection.
When the first incision made an aperture into the chest, there came forth from it a peculiar odor which smelled like duck flesh. I heard the words of Alistair Franken, who was at the last meal with Noble Baron, and who remarked that he too sensed the same odor. This was the principal food which the Baron had taken at the last meal a few hours before the malady. On both sides, the colors was of Danzig beer thinned with Cardus and dark red. There was a distinct odor of duck flesh. There was also present almond oil, which had been drunk.
He pushed on the chest and noticed a crackling noise, a phenomenon called crepitation.
It seemed to crepitate lightly if it was touched softly by the fingers. This true appearance of emphysema extended throughout all parts which were seen to be involved by this lurid color, without extending beyond these limits.
This indicated air that had escaped into the thorax. The stomach appeared quite distended and, surprisingly, the areas surrounding the lungs were filled with thick, liquid material. Boerhaave knew that nothing should be in this space. The fog was starting to clear with each incision. When he arrived at the mediastinum, the area encapsulating the heart, trachea, and esophagus, the most damning piece of evidence appeared.
When I gently turned the tip of my finger in the wound, it came upon a hiatus. It reached upon a rupture in the esophagus, and it easily and entirely entered a hinging cavity. From the outside, I thought it was in the esophagus. I hardly believed what I found, and in my amazement, I called the others, showed them this strange and odd thing. After I took my finger out, everyone examined it, and then again, putting my right index finger through the wound with some carefulness, I found an entrance into the cavity of the stomach below.
There was a large black hole in Baron von Wassenaer's tissue, surrounded by a black material. It oozed red liquid as Borhov placed his finger through. He soon came to realize that he was in the Baron's esophagus. The tissue was perforated, and this would explain the copious amounts of air and fluid that was found within his body cavities. Borhov had never heard of such a thing. He had just discovered a new condition, and history would forever know it as Borhov syndrome. I think it's that time, Jesse.
Uh-oh.
It's time to learn the science behind some of our favorite stories.
Off to the Synaptic Center. The explanation behind Borhov syndrome is pretty fascinating, so let's dive a little deeper. Borhov's is an extremely life-threatening condition that was uniformly fatal prior to modern surgical techniques. Even now, if not identified and treated in a timely manner, it can cause pretty significant morbidity and mortality. Classically, it results from extreme retching during vomiting, as what happened with the Baron. When you vomit, there's an increased pressure within the esophagus. What makes Borhov's different is that there's an inappropriate contraction of a specific muscle, called the cricopharyngeus, in the region of your pharynx, that area between your nose and the mouth that connects the esophagus. Now, imagine that you have increased pressure at the base of your esophagus from normal vomiting, but all that pressure cannot be released because the top of your esophagus is closed off by the cricopharyngeus contraction. Now, this closed system has too much pressure in the middle of the esophagus, and it's too much for the walls to handle. The muscular and serosal layers of the esophagus burst open, and stomach contents and air seep out into your cavity.
The patient has severe chest pain, sometimes radiating to the back or the shoulder. Difficulty breathing, inappropriately fast breathing, and pain with swallowing are common symptoms seen with the Borhov syndrome. The resulting flood of bacteria from the gut can cause an overwhelming blood infection, known as sepsis, which results in a systemic loss of blood volume and an inability to perfuse the tissues. The entire body can become affected, and death results if not swiftly managed with fluids, antibiotics, and sometimes vasopressive medications that maintain enough blood perfusion to reach vital organs. It is very possible that Baron John von Wassenaer was dying from sepsis based on Borhov's account. One of the signs of end organ damage is loss of urine production, and there is clear mention of no urine production in his last day of life. In the modern era, the most common cause of Borhov syndrome is iatrogenic, meaning that it is caused by procedures and operations in which physicians accidentally nick the esophagus during surgery. This etiology of Borhov is associated with lower rates of complications, portending a better prognosis overall. This is probably due to the ability to quickly diagnose and repair before bacteria flood the chest cavity.
I prudently collected the results of all this analysis. When the disease I described occurred, we could not diagnose it by its symptoms, but if it had been recognized, it would have ignored every remedy. When it recurs again, it can be recognized with the help of this description, but cannot be remedied by any assistance of the medical profession.
The events that led to the discovery of this condition teach us the importance of autopsy and diagnosis. Clearly, the autopsy will not lead to the diagnosis that will change management of the patient under study, because they're already dead. But there is massive potential for treatment of future patients. And definitive diagnosis post-mortem can give much-needed closure to the family and friends of the deceased. The autopsy continues to be a useful diagnostic tool in the practice of medicine and is performed by pathologists daily. Many diseases, such as neurodegenerative diseases of the brain, still require autopsy to make a formal diagnosis. In the case of the Baron, his body was a gateway for disease discovery and pioneered further research in the field. The medical community owes much to the people throughout history whose corpses have allowed us to understand both the fundamentals of life as well as death. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Medicalization. Please make sure to follow us on iTunes and or SoundCloud and give us a review. You don't have to give us a review, but sharing with your friends and writing a review is the best way to help us out. Tune in next time for another look into the medical history vault with Jessica and Wafi Keno. We'd like to thank our sponsors, our parents, and the guy off Craigslist who we bought this mic from.
We'd like to thank Alex Merson for his role as Dr. Borhov, as well as Nate Ziley for his role as James Van Wassenaar. Oh, Doctor! Thank goodness! It's James! James Van Wassenaar! I'm in desperate need of your help.
I have to shoot an infomercial.
Now, back to our show.